Blog Talk Radio.
Well, welcome back, everybody. Welcome to Mystic Truth Radio. I am Elaine Reed Cole here for Mystic Truth, and today we have a very interesting subject of it kind of is summarized up by surviving breast cancer, and we entitled it Thriving the Seasons of Change because everyone knows the changes that you go through physically and emotionally when you are faced with this ever-increasing, debilitating disease. And every case is different. And that's one of the things that we want to point out here, is that everybody will handle it maybe a little bit differently. People are going to have different experiences with it. This is not a cookie-cutter disease. And today, we are joined by someone who knows this firsthand. Her name is Margaret Totten. And welcome, Margaret. Thank you for joining the show today.
Thank you, Elaine. I'm thrilled to be here.
So, Margaret, let's talk a little bit about let's get into your professional background first so that people have some kind of an idea of who they're talking to.
Okay. Well, I'm a registered professional counselor and a certified life coach. It's called a coactive life coach with the Coaches Training Institute. I actually became a coach and a counselor 10 years ago, not more than 10 years ago. I switched careers in midlife. With that and also with early stage breast cancer in 2012, I have seen my life transform into being somebody who just seems to talk about change and help people with change. I have a master's degree in counseling psychology, but I do have a background in business as well, so I've been working with people in career transitions as well as personal transitions. But today I'm here as a breast cancer survivor and a stage 2B. It's not that early, but, you know, I do understand that I'm blessed actually to be able to be here to talk about this. And I know many people right now who are in, you know, stages that are further along, and there are different experiences, like you said, Elaine, definitely different experiences of surviving. But what is common to any kind of change, so you don't even have to on this call, you don't have to be a survivor of breast cancer. You have to basically be a survivor of something or survivor of change to be able to take in some of the things that are common to people who are going through that kind of thing. There are certain traits of a survivor that are very important, I think.
Well, I think one thing that, you know, sum of it up is that the one thing that you can be guaranteed in life is change. And you know, really, it happens. It's going to happen. Now, this one is a debilitating one, as so many changes are. So let's talk a little bit about your story with breast cancer and, you know, how you actually, one, discovered, and then, two, what was your next step? How did you, you know, think? Or could you think? Maybe that's the big question. You know, when you're presented with that, can you actually think?
Yeah. Well, what happened to me, I was diagnosed in April of 2012. With the stage 2B breast cancer. It's a treatable one with hormones, so it's what we call estrogen and progesterone positive cancer. So I knew that the prognosis was probably pretty good, but there's no question. The hardest part in my mind of going through breast cancer is the beginning shock. It's like you go through the stages of grief as well as change. Your life, you know your life is not going to be the same. You hope that you're going to recover, but until you actually get a plan in place, until you go through the tests and get the biopsies back and know, because even when they tell you that you have breast cancer, there's still there's still other tests that have to be done. You have to see whether it's spread. You have to see whether, you know, it's in your bones. There's all kinds of things that you've got to do first. But what I found was once I knew what I could do, once I could take action, once I had a plan in place, things very quickly became what they are in most types of change, which is, you know, the hardest thing that we deal with is the unknown. So you can take that next step because you understand that, okay, well, maybe all I can do is just, you know, I've got my appointment set up for the next 2 or 3 days, but I know that I have to do that. I know where I might have to go get some, I had a chemo drawer. I had a drawer all set up with, yeah, well, I mean, and I say that in a way that, you know, it sounds bad, but it's actually very comforting. You know, one of the things you can do for yourself if you're going through something like this or anything is have a comfort drawer. So, you know, you get the things that you know you're going to need in advance that can help you help you. You know, the one thing I believe strongly about any season of change, and especially breast cancer, is that it teaches us how we can best help ourselves, because it's very, I mean, yes, you can find other survivors, and I'll talk about that, or other people that are going through the same thing, because that helps you feel less alone, but there is no substitute for us being there for ourselves. And I guess the biggest lesson that I learned, or I'm still learning, is that nobody else could really comfort me as well as perhaps I could. I got to know myself infinitely well in during that year. And as you know, Elaine, one of the things that happened to me at that time, and I attribute my being able to go in and get diagnosed, my intuition about what happened to this, I had started with Colette Baron-Reed's course, or Master Intuitive Coach Institute, with you and many others. And it was the most amazing synchronicity to have those two things happen at once. Yeah. To have my diagnosis and have the things that I was going through, because I had to pull back from some of my work. But to have that and have a new spiritual community, have a new focus for learning and for going inward at that time, you know, there are no accidents. So for me, it was the most incredible experience to be able to do both. And, you know, but the biggest lesson was I had to learn to be there for myself. And that's something I think we all have to learn to do. We have to, you know, not only rescue ourselves, but we have to comfort ourselves, nurture ourselves, advocate for ourselves.
Thank you. I was looking for that word. I was going to bring it up, you know, be your own advocate.
Absolutely. Yep. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, so that's a little bit about my story. As I said, I changed careers in midlife. I just see my experience with breast cancer as part of my mission now. I work with people as a counselor. I work with people in all stages of diagnosis, whether they've just been diagnosed or they've gone through their treatments. Personally, I did. I had my surgery. I had. I didn't have a complete. I didn't have to have a complete breast removal. I had just part of my breasts removed, and I had 6 chemotherapy sessions 3 weeks apart, and then I had 30 radiation treatments, which were harder really than the chemotherapy, because they were every day, and it was just the draining getting there every day.
Can we talk a little bit about what, you know, we don't necessarily want to make this a totally medical kind of show, but,
no,
you know, what can people expect when they've made these decisions to have surgery, have chemo, have radiation? How did that make you feel, both physically and emotionally?
Well, physically, the thing about most of the time, when it's early stage breast cancer, physically you don't feel anything. You know, you're not sick normally. It's usually caught pretty early. I mean, if you're in stage 4, it is a different situation, obviously.
Right.
But stage 1, 2, and 3, you know, what was the most difficult in the beginning is, well, I don't feel sick. I don't feel like there's anything wrong physically. Now, as I said, intuitively I knew something was going on. I actually made my way to the doctor, and because I was under, I live in Canada, so I was under 50 at the time. I was 46, I guess. I'm 49 now. You can't automatically get a mammogram until you're 50. So I asked for one because I sensed that there was something going on, but there was nothing really there as far as a lump that I could feel, which is another point. I think it's always trust your intuition. I would say that right off. As women, you know, if you feel something's wrong, what's the worst that can happen? Go find out. Just face it.
Right.
But so I kind of knew in my mind that something was going on, which prepared me in some ways, but nothing really prepares you until you're there. So how did I feel? I felt scared, really scared. And it also depends on what kind of personality you are. There's a phrase that I've always loved, the way you do anything is the way you do everything. And Kim taught us that, I think, at one point. But if you are a person who is extremely, let's say, driven and perfectionistic or needs to have all the answers, needs to have control, you're going to approach this probably in the same type of way. If you're someone who's more laid back and who has, you know, doesn't worry as much, that'll probably come to the fore as well. Although when we're under stress, we're not at our best, right? So however we've dealt with other losses or issues in the past is probably how we're going to, you know, deal with this as well. I did that. I became very busy. You know, I did my comfort drawer, and I took the intuitive. Delved right into the intuitive coaching certification because it kept me sane.
Yeah,
I did. Yeah.
Yep.
And I walked. I walked every day. I did what I could. I thought, okay, there's some of this that is not in my control, but what is in my control? And, you know, think of it as a circle. As a counselor, this is what we're often telling people. There's stuff that is within your control in the middle. On the outside is what's not. And the more you do the things that are within your control, the further you push out on that circle and make the other one smaller. That's how I like to describe it. We always have something. There is always a next right step that we can take. We just have to, you know, take time enough to sit down and say, well, what is that step I can take today? So
right. Now, would you suggest, because you described two different types of people, one, which I knew was you as you were describing it, that, you know, push forward, let's take control. What if you're the other kind of person who just, you know, you're like the deer in the headlights? So you just gave them an idea of what to do. You know, you made a comfort draw, you went out for walks. What else can you suggest to somebody who is that kind of a person who feels totally out of control, like they don't have any control in the center whatsoever? How can they begin to establish that?
Well, I think, okay, so there are two things. There is research. It's very hard in the beginning to not give in to the feeling of despair, right? I mean, for many people, especially when you don't know exactly what's happening. You have to remember that before a biopsy comes back, 4 out of 5 are benign, like 90% are benign. So, you know, if you're at a stage where you're actually waiting for results, please be encouraged that 4 out of 5 are going to be fine. They just look a little different on the mammogram or whatever. So staying positive is something I think that we can all work on. We may not naturally feel that we are, you know, skilled at that, but it is a skill. It's not – attitude is a skill, and attitude is a habit that can be practiced. Positivity is something that we can learn to do.
Yeah.
So I guess what I would say is, even before that, if you're feeling like you're a deer in the headlights, or you're feeling like you can't, you're not sure what to do, get help is the number one thing. Seek
there
out
you
help.
Go.
Seek out
yep.
people that have been there, or people that have some experience with it. Research. Read everything you can. Start to read about it, because, you know, our minds can be a dangerous place. And
yes, they can.
To go, we know that. We tend to go to a place of catastrophizing and worrying and, you know, making assumptions. And the best way out of that is, first of all, not isolating yourself. You definitely don't want
right.
to do that. So talking to someone else just gets you into a situation where you're back in the present, you're not too far in the future, and as Colette would say, the ghost lands. You're in
yep.
the present, you're living with that next right step. And the other thing is that, you know, it really, really helps to talk to somebody to strategize about what you should do next, where you should
right.
go. It is
right.
different in Canada, I think, as well from the States, because we're very blessed in some ways, although we pay it in taxes. We're blessed that once you get into the system here, your options, you know, are open. I mean, I know friends in the U.S. who have to make very solid decisions about whether or not to go through chemotherapy, or, you know,
right.
whatever your personal beliefs are, your holistic beliefs, because they may have to work, they may not have the coverage, they may not, you know, they may not have the coverage is basically what I'm saying. It costs a lot
pretty
to
much.
Get some of
yes.
things done. So
yes.
there are other types of decisions, you know, that have to be made. But, you know, again, using this as a sort of a template for any kind of change, trying to figure it out alone is probably not going to work. So
no.
talking
yes.
to somebody that you know who's been through it, or finding a local breast cancer support group. In our city, I'm involved in the one that we have, and we also have a retreat annually for people going through treatment or who are survivors. So there are, in most places, and your local oncology department will hook you up with whoever you might need to talk to.
Great. That was going to be my next question. Okay, so
right.
they want a group. How can they find that group? And yes, your oncologist can help you. Plus, there are always people who are in charge of, say, you know, the fundraising walks, because there's
right.
an awful lot of those too, and they'll have connections. So, you know,
exactly.
mostly you just have to find somebody who's gone and done a walk, and they'll say, oh, yeah, so-and-so ran that one. And you
yes,
contact
right.
that so-and-so person, and now all of a sudden you've established some kind of community for yourself. Very
exactly.
important. Yeah.
Yes, and yeah. I think it really is, because as we know, no matter what somebody's going through, the best people to really help you not feel alone are those who can relate, you know, in a personal
right.
way.
Right.
So, and I guess I would also advise strongly that, and this is sort of something with the Canadian Cancer Society, people can help by telephone and be volunteers and that type of thing as survivors, but usually they require or ask you to have at least 5 years of survivorship before you
mm-hmm.
help, because as we're going to talk about here, the post survival pain can sometimes be, sorry, my cat is up here jumping all over the
That's
desk.
Okay. We're used to animal interference.
Go away. It's Rumi, my little cat, Rumi. Yeah, I forgot what I was
That's
saying.
That's okay. Rumi can have center stage. It's fine.
Oh, dear. Yeah.
So, yes, as far as, like, supports and walks and
mm-hmm.
I kind of lost my train of thought too, because I'm trying to picture Rumi walking around
and
on your
that's
desk.
The thing you have to do, the other thing you have to be aware of is that there is very legitimately something called chemo brain afterwards.
Yes, I was going to bring that up too. Yep.
Yep. And when it coincides with menopause, it can be quite
yep.
an issue. So,
yep.
But, you know, we make our way through, and it's definitely one of the least. I'd rather have that than, you know, and have recovered. So
that's right. And we forgive each other totally when we have that sometimers thing. You know, sometimes we remember and sometimes we don't.
Right.
So I want to, at this point, because you brought up your cat, and so mm-hmm. we want to give a little shout-out to Dana Zimmerman, my co-host, who is going through a very difficult time today. Her, as anybody who has listened to this show, you know that we are huge animal lovers, and her cat, Lily, is unfortunately succumbing to cancer. So Lily has, she was diagnosed a few years ago, and they had to have her front leg amputated. And she has done well for a few years and has totally adapted. And unfortunately, it has arisen. Oh, and that makes me remember what you were going to say. So, you know, it's so it is back, and unfortunately, Lily will be leaving us shortly. So, you know, shout out goes out to Dana. That,
yes, Dana,
we're here for
you. Sure.
Yep, we support you. So, now, do you know where you left off, Margaret? Because of that four years, you know, the aftermath.
Well, that's right. Yeah. So I'm right now I've just completed my third year of tests after having gone through my experience, and this is where I'm just starting to be able to see with clear perspective. We call it MetaView in coaching, but it's like getting way above something that you've gone through and seeing it from a distance, both, you know, in time and space. You're looking back at your experience, and you're seeing what I'm presently seeing are the silver linings, which is really
good.
Nice. I'm starting to really get to see, you know, the gift in a change or a challenge like this. But what I've come to understand, though, is that there's the actual time of going through a change, diagnosis, treatment, or any kind of change. And what happens for a lot of people when they do that, if they don't freeze, and really we can't freeze for very long. We have two choices. We either lay down or we get busy and we start eventually doing what we have to do. So in the throes of stress, I think most of us do pretty well. You know, we do put that one foot in front of the other. We do what we need to do. I particularly called on a strong faith that I had to see me through. But afterwards, what I have found is that afterwards, after we've, you know, taken our guard down, after we've gotten over the constant need for daily battle, or when we've tried to return to work full time, or when we've tried to live as if, and this is a big one, if we try to live as if it is exactly like life was before, we want to return to what was normal, right? When we're not ready to, we're not willing to accept that things are different,
right?
That's when it gets difficult, and that's what I call post-survival pain, right? And you don't have to have battled breast cancer to understand what I'm saying here.
Yep.
After surviving and coping with a severe life challenge, I think there comes a time when even the bravest and most self-aware woman or man will feel lost and maybe temporarily off track. So you can call it post-survival pain. I've also called it afterburn. You know, it's all of those things. It's like you hit a bump in the road and you can't seem to bounce back. After you've gone through what most people would say is incredible, you know, instead of being able to say, wow, look what I got through, it's like, what's wrong with me? Why am I having a hard time now? Why now, right? Because I'm now when everything's fine. So that's the thing that I think, that this is a time where it's really important to, you know, I like to describe it as putting on an archetype, almost like putting a suit on. And the archetype is the survivor archetype. And, you know, there's really three traits, I think, of a survivor of anything. You might have post-traumatic stress disorder. You might have had breast cancer. You know, sometimes those two things go together. But, you know, survivors have, they'll survive major crisis. They, through their own personal effort, they've survived a crisis. Often they've emerged with new strengths, and they found value in the experience afterwards, which is what I'm finding now.
Right.
Often they've regained stability after they've been knocked off track. So it's like you find a grounding spot eventually. These are also things, like if you're not there yet with these, there's things that you can look forward to or things that you can use as sort of a milestone posts, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Things you can work towards. Coping, you know, there are people that have coped with unfair developments effectively because sometimes we do get stuck in that place where we say, this is not fair, why me, right? We don't want
right.
to get stuck in victim mode.
Well, that's something of what I was going to ask you is, mm-hmm. did you find yourself at any point just knocked off track, just totally, okay, you know what? Because you do have that drive, maybe more so than most people. And, you know, even the best get to that place of, you know, nobody loves me, everybody hates me, I'm going to go eat worms. So, you know, when someone like yourself, who people might look and go, oh, yeah, well, Margaret did just fine with that because of the kind of person that she is. But to let people know that, you know, you too met your shadow.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
that's a good way to put it.
Everybody is going to meet their shadow when they are facing that major life challenge, no matter what it is, you know,
yeah.
be it cancer or, you know, the death of a loved one or something, you know, and you meet that shadow. And I think that's some of what you're really talking about today is being able to face those changes that we're all going to face in one way or another and how you actually get back up. So I know you faced them yourself. So
what I felt that I lost at the time, and I do remember, again, as I said, the hardest time for me was at the very beginning before I had a plan or before I knew what the road of treatment was going to look like.
Right.
Because, I mean, we all resist change. There's no question, right? It can feel like a storm barreling down on us. It's like the storm fields. We want to keep things the same in our life. We want to resist change. We've been taught to avoid it, right? We've been taught to see it as uncomfortable and scary. A change like breast cancer can reduce your self-confidence simply because of the physical changes that occur, the scars
mm-hmm.
and the treatment. Your security, your sense of security about life, your identity
mm-hmm.
can change, your relationships can change, your routine can change. And definitely your sense of control can change. As I said, for me, because I was also, well, and the other thing was I had gone through the counseling and the coaching training just before this, so my mind was filled with this idea that dealing successfully with change just requires a new perspective, right?
Yep.
My mind was filled with that. That, other than getting help or support, the second major thing I would suggest to anyone going through any big change, and breast cancer included, would be, you know, you do what you have to do to learn to see change from a different angle. Challenge the belief that change is negative.
Mm-hmm.
You know, letting go is a very difficult concept, but, you know, it includes giving up old ways of seeing ourselves. We resist change, I think, or we resist the new because it feels like we're losing parts of our old identity, right? We feel like we're losing something.
Right.
And we've been taught to believe that growth is a process of adding to what we already are. But if we think about, again, metaphors and cards or, you know, different symbolism, you think about the Statue of David or, I'm trying to think of the name of the card, it's more becoming ourselves spiritually is more about chipping
coming
away
to life.
At what Coming to Life. There, I was trying to, trying to find it. The Coming to Life card.
Yeah.
You know, it's more about chipping away things that are not authentic about us. Things. It's growing in our sense of our ability to deal with whatever's going on.
Right.
I think so. What I'm saying is, yes, you'll be scared, and yes, it will be hard at times. But when we make the shift from the external to the internal, and again, personal values really help with this. If you can get to know what is important to you, you know, for me, okay, yes, I couldn't work for a while, so I lost my momentum maybe in my counseling business, but it's come back twofold, right, or hundredfold
right.
Now. I just,
right.
It was, you know, think of it as two steps forward, one step back, instead of falling down a ladder all the way. You know, it's
mm-hmm.
like a, well, it's like the spiral dancers.
There you go.
I speak in metaphors. It's just a, you know, it's a spiral. We're going back. We think we're going backwards, but then all of a sudden we've got this deeper awareness or this deeper understanding of ourselves and life and our lessons. I think that if we can see it as a growth, a process of growth, it's definitely going to help us. Now, practically, there are some things you can do, right? I think that's important. Accepting change isn't easy. So there are four concepts that I work with. Number
mm-hmm.
one, anticipate it, right? That was sort of where I was. I went in knowing that maybe there was something wrong. I had to anticipate that it was going to be difficult once I was diagnosed. So anticipate
right.
the emotion, and you prepare by growing in self-care, acceptance, and detachment. You know, what can you do to help yourself? If you are a control freak, let it go. How do you help yourself do that? Who do you have to talk to get some help to do that, right?
Right.
Do you resist growth? Silver linings often do come. New strengths, new faith, like or deeper levels of faith come out of things like this. Now, the other thing is I think you don't have to accept it all at once either. There is no timeline for acceptance. Maybe you have to just bite off chunks of what's happened to you and accept it a little at a time. Take
right.
your time,
right?
And be flexible. We have to find patience. I think, so again, one of the silver linings for me was I had to deal with the fact that I had started up a new career and I had to, you know, step back a bit.
That's right.
But at the same time, we did something different, right? I did intuitive coaching online and with a new community and added a whole other layer of experience to my life. So that's part of it. But practically what not to do and what to do, I think, these are just some suggestions from personal experience. Don't self-medicate, right? That
mm-hmm.
doesn't help. Don't
mm-hmm.
isolate, which we've talked about. Don't
right.
ruminate, meaning, again, this whole idea of how do we change our perspective. Sometimes it's just, you know, I'm not going to sit here and dwell for half an hour. I'm going to use this time to go for a walk and listen to uplifting music instead. It's a choice.
Perfect. Yep.
Right? Don't get overwhelmed or try to do too much at once. That's something, you know, I really struggled with in the first little while. And even afterwards, you know, we can say, oh, okay, I'm better now. And sometimes we'll have times after treatment where it takes a while to get your energy back or to feel well again. So
mm-hmm.
don't get overwhelmed. Just, you know, relax the expectations that you have on yourself and let people help. Let other people help you. Tell them specifically what you need. Others want to help. And that's the other thing I found with women especially, but people that I've worked with through this. And myself as well, I have to admit. It can be very difficult to ask for help.
Yep.
And, you know, again, that's going back to being the way we were before. And I think one of the gifts of an illness or a really, really difficult change is that maybe it's the only thing that could ever happen to us that will allow us to let other people in and let them help us, because we give them a real gift by doing that.
Absolutely.
And we also learn yep. interdependence. You know, it's not good to be too independent. It's not good to be too dependent. But there's a place in the middle where we can be interdependent and where there's a give and take. And
correct.
Many of us haven't learned that. And you know, I would say in my own situation, there's, if you look at the mind-body connection, often the, and I want to be very careful here because, you know, there's no blaming the victim or, you know, we ask for this disease or anything else. But people mm-hmm. who are people pleasers and giver and give unbalanced, in an unbalanced way, it, you know, think about the fourth chakra, the heart chakra. Often
mm-hmm.
those are the people that, you know, it's a fourth chakra issue.
That's
breast
right.
cancer.
That's
so
right.
There is.
That's right.
Something to
so
there.
Then you're looking
the
at
lesson.
Having that chakra generally mm. opened up in some way, surgically,
yeah.
emotionally,
exactly.
You know, just energetically, it is opened up, and it's mm-hmm. bombarded because you didn't let that energy in earlier. There's always an energetics behind everything.
Right.
So, you know, just for people, like you said, it's no blame or anything like that, but there's always an energetic component to whatever disease is going on. And that,
that's right.
Yep. We can
and
point
I,
it back towards breast cancer, too.
Yeah. And again, and the other dynamic, I think, that people often believe is is associated is the idea or the feeling of being powerless. So one way or the other, you know, when we were talking earlier and you were saying, well, what about if you are a deer in the headlights? This
mm-hmm.
is the time, if there was ever a time, if there was ever a lesson spiritually, I think, that is involved in this, this is the time to become independent, to become, you know, independent in a good way, but to start to advocate for yourself, to not feel powerless. You know, to take the next right step, to start making your needs as important as other people's needs. Because,
right.
you know, again, back to metaphors and symbolism, think of a well. If the well is empty and people are coming to it and you're the well, there's nothing that they can get from it. So our
right.
responsibility mm-hmm. is to fill ourselves up first so that we're overflowing for those in our life. You know, it's like water flowing out of a well. Other people can drink from the well when it's full. So sometimes this is the type of thing that happens, I think, for people to learn that lesson.
Right. Now, we're not talking like a religion or anything either. What we are talking
no.
about is just
self-care.
Humanity and spirituality. You know, we are mm-hmm. spiritual beings living a human life. So it's really just getting back to the essence of what you are. You know, it's
exactly.
and it's not mumbo jumbo, it's not woo woo crazy kind of stuff. It's what we're made up of. We're made up of energy. So if our energy is depleted, how are we going to fill it back up? Where are we
right.
going to get it from? And that is connecting to the source itself. You know, if you got rechargeable batteries and you don't recharge them, like you said, you know, you got to fill up that well. Well, you got to recharge yeah. your batteries too. So how are you going to do that? Well, walking,
right.
talking, praying, eating
and here's
right.
some other do's. So that was my
yeah.
don't list. Here's the do's. No, you're right. How are you going to do it?
Yep.
Starting small, I think, is the big thing, right? I that next right step also have heard it referred to as the 1% change, right? Just don't think that you have to, don't bite off the whole thing. Just make one small
right.
change. Can I go for a 10-minute walk today? Can I, you know, maybe eat a healthier breakfast?
Yep.
And coping with stress is absolutely critical. So the three things I would say, like we said before, number one, is attitude and changing your perspective about change and working on how you're thinking about things, because attitude really is everything. You know, trying
mm-hmm.
gratitude. Developing some kind of spiritual practice or mindfulness. If you're, you know, it can be mindfulness, just staying present. Don't let your energy leak out any more than it already has. Bring it back in to you.
Mm-hmm.
And staying physically healthy is a big part of that, right? Seeking out help for emotional healing, like we've talked about, is critical. And setting boundaries, setting boundaries. Sometimes practicing self-care requires that for the first time ever, we really start to set boundaries and practice our assertiveness. Now, it can feel overwhelming to think about doing all this at once, but if you do think about it as 1% change, or just even a time to research or learn about it, I think, you know, it's very doable. And what I've heard from people who have been through, who are survivors, and how I felt about it is once you've gone through something that, you know, almost took, or where you were afraid that maybe you were going to lose everything, lose your life, you're a lot more prone to say in the future, okay, I'm going to do whatever it takes to stay stress-free. I'm going to do whatever it takes to learn a better way, because it can't be the same as before. It has to be a new normal, and that phrase, you know, gets overused, but the new normal is really, really important.
The new normal, I think, let's dwell on that for a little bit, because people might be going, well, what, I don't really get that, you know. What do you mean I can't go back to normal? Well, you know, let's dwell on that and let's, like, define that a little bit more. You know, people always try to define normal. So what do you mean by the new normal?
Okay. So as let's just take an example. In the past, for myself, I'll just tell you a personal example.
Yep.
I would definitely a workaholic.
Yep.
And it has definitely still reared its ugly head, right? There's lots of our old habits die hard. They're in there. But when you go through something and you make it through, and it's maybe temporarily derailed you, and you've had to take some time off, or you had to, you know, lessen the amount of time you've spent on something. Even when your energy comes back physically, your life is different because you've survived something, or you've experienced something that has changed you. The new normal is, I guess the way I would describe it is, it's the new normal is a mixture of a new self awareness, or a new self love, or a new self acceptance, or a new self compassion, definitely just awareness in general of what I need to do to stay healthy. You know, whereas before I would have put work as number one or two on a list of priorities for my life, now I say no. Staying stress-free, or being happy or enjoying things is number one. You know, because I know that without that, if I don't stay stress-free, then I risk a recurrence.
That's the
brutal truth. That's the brutal truth of it.
Yep.
So that's part of what a new normal is. It's staying aware, but even if you are not aware, what you'll find is you'll try to go back. I'm going back to the cards again, Elaine. I can't help myself.
It's okay. Go ahead.
Bone collector. I'm going to the bone collector.
Oh yes. Okay. Yep.
I'm thinking, you know, like it's you know, everything that you try to go back and you try to do things the same way and it doesn't work out, or it's your timing is off. But sometimes there are things that are intricate to us or internal that they're still there, but they get expressed in a different way afterwards. You know, there will be different experiences because you will be different. You will be perhaps called on to help others through your experience for the first time. Maybe you thought, you know, I don't know, I don't have anything to necessarily share. But I strongly believe that everybody does, but in this situation, there's almost like, and you will feel a desire to give back because you've gotten through it and you've learned through the experience of change some things that you can share, your personal wisdom, you know, the mixture of experience, your personal life experience and knowledge or wisdom that you've gained.
That's right. And for anybody who might be almost like choking on the idea that they have something to offer, you have to really take a look at the fact that we are in this life school, so that absolutely everything that we go through is something for us to learn and then to pass on. So you learn and then you teach, and you learn and then you teach. And that is a repetitive thing that's going to happen throughout this life and beyond. So, you know, the new normal is applying your new wisdom. And
yeah,
that's what
I agree.
So, yeah, what did you gain? And now let's share it. It's kind of like, you know, hoarding your crops. Well, who does that, you know? You don't. You farm and you farm and you grow these things, and then generally, at the end, at harvest time, you share it. You know, you put it out there. It's more than what you can possibly consume yourself, so you share it. And that's what it's like with our wisdom and with our challenges, you know, gain from it, harvest from it, and then share it out there. Which is why we have you on today, Margaret.
Well, yes. And the other thing about doing that, talking about your story or sharing your wisdom, is that although you're primarily doing it for other people, whatever you give out comes back. And it's also a very healing thing to do, to put your story together and be able to talk about it in your head and make sense of it. So it's a healing thing as well.
Right.
But, you know, I was thinking about what you're saying. What do you do if you're just at the very beginning and all of this seems overwhelming and the spiritual part of it is scary? And, you know, there are some things you can do mentally and physically right away if you've been diagnosed or if you're, you know, facing a crisis or a change all of a sudden and you're just thinking, oh, my God, how am I going to get through this? The big thing I did, and I think works for any change, is to ground yourself in your five senses, okay? So, yes, there's the intuitive part that I talked about, but what would smell, taste, feel, look, or sound good today, right? All of those things, if you write down like a list, five things that you love to smell, five things you love to taste, five things that feel good, you know, it could be a fuzzy blanket over you, it could be getting a massage, it could be getting a foot rub, it could be taking a bath. All of those things, when we ground ourselves in the five senses, they keep us present. So they, you know, the second thing is they keep us out of those ghost lands. So we can trick our brain.
Explain the ghost lands for anybody who's listening.
I know we have a lot of people who understand,
but let's go for the other audience.
Okay.
Go ahead.
I think the key to peace of mind is to stay present. Ghost lands, as Colette Baron-Reed has described, in her courses, the ghost lands are not a place of substance. They're a place where it's very difficult for us to get a handle on anything because often the reveries from the past or, you know, the past is often a depressing place where we're reminiscing or rewriting history, or they're the future, right? Or we're in the future where we don't have all the information yet. And so we're worrying about things that we have no control over. And in some cases, we're creating self-fulfilling prophecies because we get ourselves all worked up and afraid. And so what we need to try to do is to stay present. And mindfulness is the whole area of study for that. But the basic, easy first step is to stay in your five senses. That's what I found. That's what I found helpful. Okay, what can I do? So I go for a walk. You know, walking is a grounding meditation. It's, you know, you can't help but stay present. You have to look around, make sure you're not going to get hit by a car. You notice the trees, or you notice a deer, or whatever. So staying present and focusing on small victories, right? This is another thing that I found really helpful, journaling. At night, I would say, what did I do right today? You know, what's one thing I'm proud of having done? Because in a time when, you know, you're kind of taken away from some of those work-related accomplishments that you might have normally looked at as a way that you've judged your day a success, you need to find other things. You need to say, I did
right.
well today. Even if it was I just walked 10 minutes or I drank my 8 glasses of water or I got to my appointment. You know, keeping a list of those things is important.
That's right.
And we can also, you know, we can empower ourselves to think more positively or have positive self-talk in a couple of ways as well. Again, going back to the basics, the simple things. We can build ourselves up, right? We can write lists, again, even if we've done it before, we can write out lists of our strengths, like what are my strengths, and focus on them daily. Or we can do our affirmations, again, remembering that the emotion needs to be there to have them really work, but we can do that. We can be our own cheerleader. Like, we can give ourselves some pep talks.
Right. Right.
Or affirm that we can handle this challenge or that this too shall pass. You know, those are things that we can say until we believe them.
That's right.
And then the big thing is loving yourself unconditionally, right? We're all works in progress. We're not, these times of really big crisis, personally or professionally, are times when we're naturally going to be stressed out and we're not going to be at our best. And so we need to remember that we're all works in progress and that we're not going to have perfect days every day.
Mm-hmm.
It's not about that. What did I do? What's one thing I did right? Or how did I cope?
Right. Now, one thing that, because you know, Margaret, I've worked with a lot of people who are
mm-hmm.
dealing with cancer. And,
yeah.
you know, quite a few of them have passed and, you know, quite a few of them have survived. And the ages
right.
are from, you know, all over the place. So one thing that I do find, and quite often it's women more so than men, is that they will start to avoid mirrors. Because
mm-hmm.
of, you know,
yeah.
going through the different treatments, you know that, you know, it's a huge physical change. One of the major ones usually being that, you know, they lose their hair. Another
mm-hmm.
one is, you know, just their elasticity to their skin seems to
right.
go away. Their pallor has changed.
Mm-hmm.
They have a tendency to lose weight or, depending upon the treatment, they get very bloated. So they start beating themselves up because they don't like how they look. And, you know, you want to kind of address that part of it. I know you went through some of those physical
mm-hmm.
changes, as most people do when they're following, you know, the chemo and radiation routine.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened? I find children don't mind as much. You know, they're almost curious about how their head's going to look bald. You know, they're like, geez, can you do it too? You know, and they want everybody to kind of join in. But being
mm-hmm.
a woman, that's a tough area, especially if you're, you know, you've gone through, say, a mastectomy or double mastectomy or something, and then on top of all the other physical changes. And so address that a little bit, would you?
Sure. You're absolutely right. And what comes to mind, you know, primarily when you talk about that is the importance of, again, reaching out to somebody to express and process your emotions. You know, everything
mm-hmm.
I've been saying is, yes, have a good attitude, blah, blah, blah. You know, ground yourself, do practical things. But we can't jump the staircase either. That's a phrase that I like to use. And that just
I like
means that
one.
We can't, yeah, you can't jump the staircase. You can't ignore your emotions and not expect them to come out later. In fact, that's one of the things that leads to chronic illness. So emotions are going to have to be faced one way or another. And it's important to find somebody that you trust, that you can talk to about how you're feeling about your physical changes. But again, in my case, I lost all my hair, and I knew
mm-hmm.
I was going to lose it. Again, going back to the idea that, you know, however we normally are in our personality is probably going to come out. I chose, as I knew that it was about to all fall out, like it had started to come out, I chose to make it a ritual. I took a night and I sat down in front of my mirror and I pulled out what I could on my own. I made the decision to do it all. And instead of waiting, I just said, I'm going to take this out. And then I had my husband shave it. And, you know, I did it all at once. I took control of the situation. That was my way of trying to do it. You know, again, I didn't have my whole breast removed, so it is a different situation. I did definitely notice a difference, and I felt the difference, but it was, I didn't go through the extremes that some other people do in that respect. So, again, I'm trying to answer without acting like I have all the answers, because I certainly don't.
Your opinion counts, though.
Yeah. I guess what I'm intuitively being asked to say is that, again, life meets us with these lessons on the road. And one of the things that I've found over and over again with different people I've talked to when they've had chronic illnesses or they've had things happen that have changed their personality or changed their appearance or changed their relationship is that it's all an invitation to go inward. It's all an invitation to, you know, to definitely express your emotions, express how you feel, but then look at your essence. You know, it's that chipping away sometimes of things that, you know, you realize after a while, well, yes, okay, so this is hard and I don't like the way I look without my hair. Mm-hmm. But then you think, okay, I'm still this. You know, what am I still? That's why I say, what did I do right today? But also, what am I? What are my strengths? Go to things that are more core values or core strengths, things that are lasting, things that don't disappear when your job disappears or when you get sick. You know, there's certain things that are always there for us. That's us being there for us in the deepest way. What is it that you can still say, you know, and can you still love yourself? Can you still look in the mirror? Can you say, I have compassion for myself for having to go through this? Because as soon as you can, this is what I believe. This is my personal belief. My personal belief is that whatever is going on inside of us is going to be reflected outside. And the world reflects it back like a mirror. So as soon as I accepted myself and I accepted the situation, I accepted that I had no hair and that I had, you know, I was prepared. I had my wigs ready and I quite liked them. And, you know, I looked at that as a little bit of a chance to do some different things. But as soon as I accepted, I found that other people around me very quickly accepted it as well.
Right.
Accepted the changes as well.
And to accept from other people, and don't shut it out, when they turn around and they say, you are beautiful.
Yes.
Even when you're in that place, to be able to hear that and to accept it, because they really mean it. You know, you're thinking, oh, they're just saying that. You know, oh, they're just saying that. Well, no, they're seeing something more so than just your earth suit. They're seeing you. They're seeing that part that you were talking about, Margaret, that, you know, it's your essence that's coming forward. And they're seeing that. And that's beautiful.
They are seeing a survivor. And, you know, a survivor is a very, very resilient, strong, brave, courageous, warrior-type archetype. And that's why, you know, again, I guess, you know, we're close to the end here, but I would summarize with that is that, you know, if you can see yourself as a survivor and you really search out what that means to you, right, a survivor has a commitment to survive. They're curious. They're inquisitive. They keep having a desire to learn and grow and deal with what life sends them. They have a sense of humor sometimes, even when it's hard. They get over things. And I know that sounds harsh, but they learn to resolve and let go of things that have happened or mistakes they've made, which is just as important, right? mm-hmm. or challenges with time. It takes time and it takes reaching out, but you know, that's, we don't get stuck. And then they also learn to deal with uncertainty.
That's right.
We all have, as you said in the very beginning, Elaine, change is the only constant in life.
Mm-hmm.
So the ability to persevere in adversity is something that all of us at some point in our life are probably going to have to learn.
Right.
You focus on what you can do right now.
I do want to say, too, that when we talk survivor, we don't necessarily just mean someone who is alive.
No.
A survivor can be someone who does succumb to an ailment or a disease. It isn't the attitude that you've had while you're transitioning, while you're going through that change. That defines the survivor. Like you had said, it's the archetype. It's not the final outcome, because honestly, we don't always know what the final outcome is going to be. So,
absolutely.
So, you know, don't think that that's what we're talking about. What we are talking about is the attitude and how to deal with this seasons of change.
Yeah.
So how would you like to wrap it up there, Margaret? I mean, so much that we can just like...
I know.
Yeah.
I get so passionate and excited about this because it's so close to my heart. And it is October in Canada. I believe it's the same in the U.S., but it is Breast Cancer Awareness Month.
Yes, it is.
And we just had our Run for the Cure, which I walked this year. I walked to 5K on Sunday.
Good for you.
That was... Yeah.
Yep.
I didn't know for sure, but what I think is really important right now is if you're touched by breast cancer in any way, shape, or form, the big thing is to take care of yourself, right? Make sure that you do continue to get checked out or you get your tests, and if you have other people in your life that you can be an advocate for, to have them go and do the things they need to do for early detection.
Mm-hmm.
These days, you know, early detection is saving, it's made the survival rate jump by or double or triple, you know,
mm-hmm.
90% or more of people do survive after 5 years. But it's that early detection that's key, so that's the first thing I would say. But the other thing I would say is just, you know, personally, when you think about how you want to be through the experience, if you are going through it at any stage or you are a survivor, some people, again, like I always say, there are people that have survived 17, 20 years that I know, and I humbly sit at their feet and listen for their advice too, because everybody's at different stages. But I always believe that it's important in any change to look ahead and say, what would I have to do at the end, whatever the end is, to have had no regrets? What is
perfect.
It that I'm going to do today to make sure that the me of 10 years from now, or the me, heaven forbid, on my deathbed, you know, whatever, will say, I stayed aware, I stayed conscious, you know, I learned something from this experience that made me, I don't want to say a better person, I just want to say a whole. What do I need to do that makes me whole?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
When I finally move on to wherever I think I'm moving on to, you know, depending on what my face is as a person.
Right.
So no regrets.
I like that. No regrets.
Illness, breast cancer, what it does is it makes you appreciate each moment of life and cling to what is there afterwards in a way that I know myself, I didn't have the same appreciation before as I do now for life. The there's a word for it. It starts with A. I'm trying to think of the word. No, I know what it is. It's a reverence.
Okay.
A reverence for life.
Perfect. Mm. Perfect. You can tell, Margaret, you're exuding this. It's just like spilling out from you. So, you know, I really
hope that people listening to this have gained some information that they can either utilize for themselves or pass on to their loved ones. You know, certainly share this program. And Margaret, if people wanted to get in touch with you, how do they go about that?
Okay, well, the easiest way is through my website. My company name is Second Sight Coaching and Counseling, and the website is www.secondsightcoaching.com, and it's site as in S-I-G-H-T, so secondsightcoaching.com. Or you can just look up, Google my name, Margaret Totten, and it will come up. I'm in Canada, and I work with people face-to-face through various companies here, but I also work online through Skype and phone. So I'd be happy, I'd be honored to work with anybody who would like to call.
There you go. And Totten is spelt T-O-T-T-E-N.
That's
Margaret
right.
Margaret Totten.
Yeah.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you very much, Margaret. I greatly appreciate
thank
all
you
this
for
information
the...
that you have shared.
Yeah. I really appreciate the opportunity.
Absolutely, and we'll have you back again.
Okay.
She won't
it's a
disappear,
date.
Guys. She'll be back. It's a date. So I am Elaine Reed Cole, and that's like a testament. I am Elaine Reed Cole, and I am speaking for Mystic Truth Radio. If you want to get a hold of me, you can go to our website, which is www.mystictruth.net, or if you also want to get a hold of me personally, you can go to www.thewingedmystic.com. And I'm also on Facebook, and, you know, go ahead and like our Mystic Truth Radio page. We appreciate the listening. And you know what? As we always say, until next week, let's keep talking about it. All right. Thanks, Margaret, and bye, everybody.
Okay. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.